Welcome to Town Square. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. As always, our conversations include you. And if you'd like to join us anytime during the program, the phone lines are open. 941-3689 is the number to call from Oahu and from the neighbor islands. Or if you're listening to the live stream, you can reach us at 877-941-3689. Maybe it's the activism, maybe it's the Honolulu City Council bills, maybe it's the ongoing visibility in parks, slots, and sidewalks. Whatever it is that has made homelessness a defining issue this year, and doubtless it's the confluence of many reasons, homelessness is on our collective radar. In the past year, we've all learned more about housing first and about some of the best practices in other cities and other states. And we've been offered alternative views of how to see the issue of homelessness differently. How Hawaii offers help to the houseless seems to have gotten a lot more traction lately, but perhaps that would depend on how you define help. Tonight on Town Square, we'll look at where we are now with current programs and plans to help the homeless with some of the people shaping the conversation and the strategies. Joining me tonight, State Homelessness Coordinator Colin Kippen is here. He's also the chair of the Hawaii Interagency Council on Homelessness. Connie Mitchell also joins us. She's the executive director of the Institute for Human Services. Recently, IHS announced its plan to keep would-be mainland homeless folks from coming to Hawaii and to help about 120 homeless people to return to their home states. Greg Payton joins us. He's the CEO of Mental Health Kokua and the executive chair of Partners in Care, a membership organization working in collaboration with many nonprofit homeless service providers on Oahu, and Larry Geller, community advocate and editor of the blog Disappeared News. Thank you all for being here. Nice to have such a full table. And I'll apologize to you at the start that I'm losing my voice just a little bit, so my apologies that you have to suffer through the next hour with this. Thank you all for coming. As I mentioned in the intro, there are a lot of ideas about homelessness that seem to have come out into the more of the public sphere this year. At least anecdotally, that's what a lot of people have been telling us and have been feeling. I want to go right around the table and get from you your perceptions of where we are now with homelessness and any movement that you've particularly seen over the last year. And Greg, since you've never been here before, we'll start with you.
Well, thank you. Thank you for inviting us and for being able to tell the story. It's a powerful story, and it's an exciting one for this year. Partners in Care is a part of the continuum of care, which every city has that receives funding from the HUD Hearth Act, which is the part of HUD which funds homeless services across the United States. So our continuum of care here locally in Oahu is called the Partners in Care. So we've been working on this last year in conjunction with the Colin Kippen's office, is kind of a new way of looking at homeless services. We've all been providing quality services for a very long time in the community, each of us doing the good work that we do individually. What's really changed in the last year, which is exciting, is to be able to provide a more coordinated approach to care. Even though we've all talked to each other and we've all worked together for many, many years, having a coordinated assessment, a central way that we can make sure that we have all the information available for somebody. So we assess all the people that are out there that are homeless and come up with what are the resources needed for that population, and then finding a way to place people in the most appropriate level of care and really identify what their needs are, because there's many layers to it. And finally, I think the biggest thing that we've come up with, we're realizing, is shared resources. This is something that doesn't cost us a penny more, but it makes us much more efficient.
Connie?
I would agree, and I also wanted to say that I think our public has really focused a lot more attention and they've been more educated to the complexities of homelessness. I think they are just more greatly aware of some of the problems that are happening and impacting them in their own communities. But I also am very hopeful because I see a lot of political will to really work on the real solutions, which is the affordable housing for people and not, you know, just temporary solutions like a shelter even or, you know, going out and doing outreach. We really want to house people. And I think that that has been a true focus for the service providers.
Larry Geller, you're often a gadfly in a lot of conversations and certainly in this one, too. What have you observed over the last year?
I'll do my best to be a good gadfly today. The homelessness problem didn't spring on us this past year, even though it finally got into the newspaper. Other states have had their Housing First program going for, 10 or 12 years already with good success in many places. Finally, for whatever reason, Hawaii has got it going. And I really mean that. I'm very encouraged by what the state is doing. Colin has held some remarkable meetings with a huge crowd to listen to, explanations by experts about what needs to be done in Honolulu to reduce and perhaps, close to eliminate homelessness here. This is, I think, the first time that the right resources are being put in place at the state level so that we have a chance of moving people from the streets, supporting them in their lives so that they can stay in housing. The city, on the other hand, I have my doubts.
All right. Well, as you've been so complimentary to Colin Kippen, who happens to be here, you're up next.
Aloha, Beth Ann. I think what I want to say is a little bit of what everyone has already said today. When I took this job a couple of years ago, what was really striking to me was that I had a hard time seeing a system where all the gears were meshing together. And it seemed like people were really doing great things, but it was as though, because of the complexity of the issue, we were very segmented. And I think that what we've really tried to do, and you can't do this by yourself, you got to do it with folks who really want to be the best they can be, is we've tried to figure out how is it that we can mesh ourselves together and to create this synergy. And I think we've actually done that. And there's a little bit of a, sometimes a handicap ends up being a real benefit. And our handicap is I have no budget. So if I wanted to go and see and hear and learn something, either I did it on my own or I got somebody who knew something to come here. And it was a lot of the latter that ended up happening, because I went out and we recruited all these national experts from the Housing and Urban Development Department, from SAMHSA, from Veterans Administration, and we got all these folks to actually come out here and help teach our community what some of the best practices were so that we could then take those and, shape those models to work here in Hawaii. And that's a big part of what we did. And I think it's actually starting to really pay benefits because we're working through creating the system. The system is now coming into play, and we're collecting this incredible data, which we never had before.
You've all mentioned collaborative efforts. And earlier this year, Colin, when we were talking on a phone call for the conversation, and you mentioned that, there was this bright idea that everyone thought that they should begin to network. Did that strike you at all as being just something that should have happened a long, long time ago rather than people working in isolation?
I think if you look at any organization, any structure, it is always about getting the human beings to work together. I mean, I just think that's a very difficult piece of work, no matter how sophisticated your entity is or no matter how intelligent and sophisticated the people working in the system are.
At this point now, as you've sort of laid out what you see happening, we still are told about people who are having their tents swept away. Earlier today, we got calls about another raid that was in progress and not something that was happening at night, not something that was happening necessarily the way in which it should have, with stickers and bins and all the rest of that. As you assess things like this that are still happening and not necessarily well coordinated with other entities where there might be the opportunity to offer help first, how do you look at things like this when we see it happening at a time of day where perhaps help can't be offered as much?
Actually, I think there are opportunities, to partner. And I think for IHS, we have partnered with the city on some of the times where they have been cleaning up different areas of the city. However, I think when they're doing what enforcements or whatever they're calling them, I think it's really kind of, you know, something that's happening right then and there. And it's really difficult, you know, when people have stories about them, because, you know, it might be one story passed on to somebody else and another person, and you really don't know what happened. And so I think it's really important to take, you know, everything that is said and really go out to those people and ask them, what is it that you really need now? And that's what we're about. It's really about trying to provide service for people. And if it's something that, you know, as we said, we kind of divide up the island to cover certain areas. If it's an area that we're saying we're going to help and, you know, really deliver services, then we invite people to call us, you know, to say, okay, could you help me here? And we get calls every day, Bethann, you know, for people asking for help. Different types of situations. Maybe somebody's just losing their housing at that point, or they've been with their friends for too long and they really need someplace else, you know. So I think it's really about responding to a person's need. And it's not just service providers, it's not just government, but it's our whole community that needs to respond.
Which is in part what we have had reports was happening today, that people were offering their cars to be able to help people who were going to lose their belongings if they weren't taken away. But we're all talking about Kaka'ako, which is not necessarily an area that you cover. So it was, you know, one of those situations where perhaps people didn't know that it was happening. They didn't know that they could call someone, and we still see these things happening.
I think we should explain what happened today to the best of our knowledge, and because it's really symptomatic of the difference between the city and the state approach. And usually the raids are conducted at night, so people are with their belongings. What happened today, as far as we know from multiple reports that were tweeted, that are on Facebook, and they're in the emails and the phone calls I got, were the Hawaii Five-O needs to film a car chase. Okay, we don't know the interaction between the city and Hawaii Five-O, who decided that there needs to be a raid today during the daytime. But a raid during the daytime is different. People are at work. People are not with their tents and their belongings. And so all of these things were scooped up, and the pictures are coming in. Before I left to come here, I already had quite a few in my email. Garbage trucks, city workers collecting belongings and tents and throwing them into the garbage truck where they're destroyed. I don't think anyone around this table will be able to say that this helps those people. It does not. It does not help anyone to have you to come back. They're homeless, but this is their home such as it is. And you come back and your stuff is gone. Maybe your ID, maybe your meds, maybe your kids' school books. There are children out there, too. There are families living there.
And today a very pregnant woman.
And today a very pregnant woman.
In about 10 days.
Right. So this is a difference in the approach. I don't think there's any escaping it. There's some tweets out there to Hawaii Five-O to please explain themselves what role they played in this raid, because it's not their image. But it is the image of the way the enforcement has been conducted. It's not there's nothing compassionate about this disruption. It's just cruelty.
So as the rest of you are looking at this, and obviously we have bits and pieces of information, no one has a complete story at this point, because we got those same letters and emails and pictures, and there's a video out that's been posted on Facebook too. But as you all are assessing that this is, you know, one more situation where people have lost homes, lost belongings, and may never be able to get them back, how do you look at what the city has done, Colin?
Well, I think my perspective is that my job here is to work on a permanent solution. And I think the permanent solution is really one that sounds in this idea of housing first. And this idea is something that's more than simply just saying that we're going to house you. What it's really doing is it's literally changing the manner in which we operate. And here's what's different. What's different is that we are aligning all of our resources to the extent we have them. And we are going to see that we don't have sufficient resources. But to the extent that we have the resources, we're aligning them as soon as possible in the interaction with the client. Everything is housing focused now. So the idea that a person needs to be in shelter for a given amount of time before they move into or get ready to go into permanent housing is something that we're really trying to change, because we want that housing event to occur as soon as possible, with the idea that if that person needs services based on the assessments that we have, we then know that some people may need a lot of services and some may not. Some people may need just to regain their sense of self-sufficiency and their ability to take care of themselves. So there are a number of people who are homeless. It is not one demographic. There are those who have been on the streets for many, many years who are chronically homeless. There are those who are relatively new to the streets and who require substantially less services. What we're doing now for the first time is we're beginning to understand who the homeless are so that we can align the services to them.
When you talk about who is homeless, the state of homelessness in America that just came out, the report that just came out, looking at non-chronic to chronic homelessness, most of the people are non-chronic. I mean, if you look at those who are non-chronic people in families plus non-chronic individuals, you know, you're looking at about 80% of the people that we look at and say are homeless. And that, from what you're saying, I mean, that's the fixable part that you're looking at. Well, you're looking at fixable in terms of getting anyone who needs to be in permanent housing into permanent housing.
I actually think that the entire spectrum of homeless people can be assisted. And I think what is going to be the result of the data that we are collecting is we will literally be able to go community by community and identify those people who have really high levels of need, who are very chronically homeless, who are very sick, and they are also very expensive to all of our systems, to our 911 system, to our police system, to our emergency rooms, to our hospitals. And that's that group that really requires a permanent supportive housing approach. And then there are those who are not as sick, who simply require maybe 3 to 6 to 9 months of support, and then they can regain their equilibrium and their balance. And there are those even lower who literally have had a traumatic event occur. And if we could figure out a way, and we actually have figured out the way, so that we could triage the level of service to the needs of the people who are in front of us, we could do this much more efficiently.
Tonight on Town Square, we're talking about homelessness. Colin Kippen is here, Greg Payton, Connie Mitchell, and Larry Geller, all who have been involved in many different levels of homelessness from, well, you know, you've been listening to it and you've been paying attention. And that's one of the reasons why we're having a little bit more time tonight to be able to talk about it. The perception has been that we've been looking at homelessness more this year, that it's been more of a defining issue. The question is it a defining issue for you? Our phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Greg, I want to get you in on this, though, because as you hear about this raid today and all the plans that may be in works, all the good things about getting people stabilized and in housing first, and yet we still have things like this happen. How do you work with something like this at a time when most people are going to be at work?
I was surprised to hear about it as well. And I think my fear with this kind of action is that it would sort of make it okay to be angry and to take action against people that are vulnerable in the community, that somehow the people that are out there might be seen as in the way or a problem, and taking this kind of negative action, it might give it some kind of approval that it's all right to do something like that. I know certainly Connie and I have both experienced working with people in the community locally, and I've been really pleasantly surprised at the amount of support there is from local merchants and local residents in our projects to really try to figure out what to do. In fact, we've had several meetings with local merchants and residents in Chinatown, for example, and I've been stunned, quite frankly, at the positive support from the local community.
What did you find stunning?
Well, you know, you all know the old expression, "not in my backyard." So whenever there's a disability group, a mental health organization, somebody that wants to put anything in a community, there sometimes can be a community outcry and people push back and not want to provide that service there. It's called not in my backyard or NIMBYism. And that's really not what we're finding. I'm sure Connie would have a similar experience. What we're finding is people are kind of excited and encouraged that there's a vision for how to solve this problem, and they want to be part of it. And I've had people actually approach us asking how can they help, and what does that mean? How can they help actually making investments with us to figure out how we can create affordable housing? So it's my fear about actions such as today, for whatever reason they happened, might give the impression that it's okay to take negative action like this and make victims out of the people that are homeless.
Is that also how you assess the city council bill, the 48 that's going to be looked at again tomorrow, the idea of expanding the sit-lie bill?
There's other cities have done similar kinds of legislation, and it has had varying success around the country. There's always that concern that this could victimize people or make people criminals. So I'm not sure that that's so much an issue. For example, just the other night, I was at the Chinatown Neighborhood Board meeting. There were several police officers there that were reporting at the Neighborhood Board meeting, and they were enforcing the sit-and-lie bill, and it was very well done. The city did a nice job with it, and just had people move so people could get by on the sidewalk. It was not a big problem. So I've seen it done well.
We're going to go now to one of our callers. If you'd like to join us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Donna calling us from Kalihi. Aloha, Donna. Welcome to Green Square. Hi there.
Hi, yes. I've been homeless, living in my van here for 8.5 years. Can you hear me?
Yes, we can.
Okay. And I've had case management, and it's gotten to the point where they said that they couldn't help me, okay? First, I was with IHS, and this guy, Damien, tried to find a care home for me. We couldn't find one where there was any parking in the city. He gave me this list of pages and pages for me to go through and to call, but I was not well enough to do that. And he thought I was making excuses, and he didn't have time to do it because he has his own caseload. Then I had another case manager from Care Hawaii, and we couldn't find any the transitional shelter is what we were looking for, because I don't want to stay at IHS anymore. I had enough of it. You know, you cannot live years and years in there without going crazy. All right? So I did that before I got my van. And then, so anyway, going back to what I was saying, the places that I found that I could stay at, they don't have elevators, and I can't climb stairs, okay? So that left out a lot of places, and I'm not a senior citizen, so I can't qualify for that kind of transitional housing.
But you can't climb stairs because you have a disability?
Yes. That's why I'm getting Social Security now. So there's nothing in the city. If you can't climb stairs, and if you're not a senior, then you're out of luck in the city.
All right, let's see what some of our panelists have to say. And Donna, thanks so much for your call.
Okay.
So what do you do for someone like that? She mentioned that she was at IHS, but that she doesn't want to stay there years and years. IHS was never meant for somebody to stay years and years. Is she an isolated case, or because of her disability and the inability to climb stairs and other things, is she just one of those people who, like many, may not be able to find a place?
Actually, I think that there are some solutions for her. IHS does have a housing department that has many different programs. It's not just for one type of program where, you know, you have to have a disability, but we certainly work with people who have disabilities all the time. And so I think if she wants to find a place, you know, she doesn't have to come into the shelter. We're able to provide housing services regardless. You know, so I welcome her to just give us a call if she would like to. But I understand if, you know, she didn't have a good experience, that, you know, she wants to try a different organization. There are also others, you know, so if there's an outreach worker that's working with her already, or she wants to share off air where she is and someone can go and actually find out what's happening with her, we might be able to connect her with somebody else.
All right,
well.
Donna. So if you're listening and you want to leave us with your phone number, sorry about that, gang, then please leave us your phone number and we'll try to connect you best as we can off air. Going now to Guy, calling us from Kaka'ako. Aloha, Guy.
Yes. Good evening. Hey, I have a kind of a solution for this problem. Nobody wants to do it. Containers. You take 30 containers. You open them. You put 5 partitions in it. You have one bed, one chair, one desk, one table. You get all these people sleeping now on a clean floor and a solid roof. And you lay them out so that you have a little village. And you also have a container at the entrance for security, one container for caseworker. You bring them here. You force the church not to feed them in Kapiolani Park or in Kaka'ako, but at the same place. And then, if the soup is good, they're going to stay there. You let them stay there all day long. Any shelter, those people, they have to get out 7 o'clock. They have to get out in the street, but we don't want to see them in the street. Right there, you leave them in the village, and you let them be themselves. They have a pet. You let them out with a pet. And then, you have the big tent, you know, with the table, chairs, right. And the church are coming. They got your container for their storage. They got everything.
All right. Thanks, Gay, very much for the call.
Yeah,
this is not a suggestion that you all haven't heard before. The Appleseed Law Center has talked about different modes of housing people temporarily or for longer term, including using containers. But we haven't really looked at any of that in terms of how to realistically do that here. We talked about the Sand Island thing, and that turned out to be not such a great idea because no one had vetted whether or not it was a safe place to be with what was in the ground.
Sand Island is not housing first.
No, but that's a whole other issue. So my point is that in looking at this from a housing first perspective, can something like container housing be worked into it?
This is part of a larger issue of availability of housing to anybody, whether they're in housing now or whether they're homeless. Affordable housing, affordable rentals in particular, are very scarce. And there have been a number of proposals that sound like containers or modular construction or other plans. But we need to deal with the poverty issue in Hawaii. We need to deal with people being able to afford to stay in the housing that they're in. That's part of it's another aspect of taking people who've already fallen out of housing and putting them back in housing. We lack the housing. We need to look at that.
Well, certainly that's what came out of the briefing yesterday. I mean, hearing an astronomical number like 50,000 units shy of what we need by 2016 and knowing that we're not going to get that. I mean, none of these issues exist in a vacuum. They all feed into each other.
Yeah. You know, the idea of container housing is really just, as you suggested, Beth Ann, it's part of just a whole bunch of ideas that have been vetted over the last couple of years since I've been here. And you know, there are other ideas, for example, micro units, which are much smaller units that'll be built. And in fact, there's a proposal that's about to be queued up by the HCDA to build micro units that are very affordable on Cook Street. So that's an idea that they're about to do an RFP.
And a micro unit would be about what, 500 square feet?
A very small unit, and they would probably be for people who would get around on transit. It would be very centrally located, and the big idea here is to lower the cost of construction for that of the individual unit. There's some other ideas that you may not have heard about. About a year ago, I pulled a group together, and we talked about building a Hawaiian kauhale. And that is literally a community that's self-contained, and it comes together in terms of it honors and it reflects cultural practices, traditional Native Hawaiian cultural practices, and it's literally a group of people choosing to live together, and abide by a common set of rules and with a very strong cultural emphasis. And that was a big part of what we were talking about because some of the activists in the Hawaiian community approached me saying, you know, we really need some other housing models here. The housing model that we now have, the single-family dwelling, may not be appropriate for all people who really need housing and want to be part of a community.
You're listening to us tonight on Town Square, taking a look at the issue of homelessness. We want to hear from you. Yes, you've heard a lot about homelessness over the last year, especially. That's not just anecdotal feelings. It's reality. It seems to be a defining issue of this year. The question is, how much of it is on your radar? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. What do you think your part is in creating a state where homelessness is hopefully just a thing of the past? 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going to Aaron, calling us from Kalapana. Aloha, Aaron. Welcome to Town Square.
Hi, Beth Ann. Thanks so much for taking my call.
A pleasure.
Hey, listen, everybody's talking about, the last guy talked about container homes and stuff. This is not what we want to do. I really appreciate that people are taking care of homeless people, but what's after homelessness? I mean, we can't eventually house everybody in containers. We need to move on. And nobody's talking about it. They're just talking about services to the homeless. Let's talk about that for a little bit. What's after homelessness? That's all.
Okay. Thanks very much, Aaron. All right. Thanks. What's after homelessness? Very quickly, we'll go right around the table. Larry, you go first.
We have a housing problem. There are many solutions. I agree completely with the caller. We don't want to be putting people in containers. We're focused too much about the homeless situation without looking at the larger housing situation. There's $19.5 million penthouses is going up in Kakaako. Maybe there are solutions involving having those developers build some actual housing, not containers, but real studios, one-bedroom and two-bedroom spaces that will be under rent control or rent stabilization or under a co-op regime instead of a condo regime where somebody buys shares instead of buying a unit.
Isn't that sort of the idea behind the micro-units?
Micro-unit is a way of construction. I'm talking about looking at the housing situation in Hawaii and in Honolulu in particular and saying that we have some leverage with these developers who are getting anything they want, any kind of exemption that they want. So instead of exemptions, well, if they want the exemption, let them build 50 affordable, and by affordable I mean truly affordable rental units that will be maintained under some system of regulation in perpetuity as affordable units. We can do that. New York City did that. Many municipalities and states did that after the Great Depression. We should look at that and provide real housing for people, not containers.
All right, we're going to take a few more calls. We're going to go to Juan calling us from Aleamanu. Juan, are you there?
Hi, good afternoon, yeah.
Welcome to Town Square.
You know, when I heard a comment about the containers, it kind of flashed me back. And I understand that the ultimate cure or the ultimate solution is to restore folks to, you know, have a job and be able to have a decent place to live and raise their families. But, you know, I think as far as going to the containerized units, I'm a U.S. soldier, and I've deployed several times. And in Afghanistan and Iraq, you know, soldiers live in containers, you know, two or three soldiers at a time, and it's usually 20-foot containers. We have the beds. There's a general shower area for all soldiers to go to, but I know I've had buddies of mine that live in those for 15 months. So, I mean, I think ultimately that's to think that a family is going to be able to re-raise that container would be a little bit absurd. But considering it as far as cost in the community and cost to the city, a container wouldn't be that bad. I mean, I can tell you, you know, the bombs blasting everywhere, I was still comfortable in a container. So I think as a temporary means to house some people while, you know, since we're looking at having scarcity in units, that might not be a bad plan. It's just my idea from my experience.
Thanks very much for calling and sharing your experience. But this all comes down to that question again of what happens after homelessness and whether this temporary solution is a solution that should be employed or whether you move more to you know, something that has more longevity to it.
Bethann, you actually said earlier, 50,000 units of housing that we need, and 28,000 of them are supposed to be under 120% of area median income. So if that is the case, I don't know if we can build our way out of the problem. I do think that Guy, who had called in earlier, was talking about what happens next after homelessness. That is what we really need to work on. We need to help people find jobs. We need to help people get over obstacles to them being able to work again. And I think that that is something that we definitely have more room to grow in. There's definitely workforce development issues that can be addressed so that we give people opportunities to get back on their feet. That's really the key.
So if it's not a case of building our way out of it, which we kind of all knew going into this and have known for a long time, what becomes the way of being able to service not only the homeless population, but those who are just needing affordable housing so they don't become homeless?
Well, you know, the reality is that when we look at homelessness, the numbers that we look at, we're not considering all of those people who are...
The hidden homeless.
Yeah, right? Well, those people whose toes really are over the edge and they're teetering about to fall into this abyss, right? We don't consider any of them homeless because they're not homeless yet. I think that there's something definitely going on here in Hawaii, and it has to do with the fact that so many people want to come here and want to buy real estate here, and they literally drive our prices through the roof. And I can tell you, I have three adult children. Two of them do not live in Hawaii. And, you know, I'm born and raised here. And I can tell you, family after family after family that I know who have kids that are my kids' age are literally in the same boat, where their kids aren't able to live here unless they live with their parents. And, of course, you know, that again does create sometimes some stresses in families, but that is culturally something we're very comfortable with here in Hawaii. So it's not uncommon in the community I grew up in to see two and three and four generations living together in a single family home. And it's great when everybody gets along, but there are times when the stresses of living, you know, in such close quarters does create problems, and then people end up becoming homeless because they don't have anywhere to live because a relationship has just blown up. So those are some of the things. So I think part of it is about jobs and education and all of that, but it's also got to be about, I think, what Larry was suggesting, which is we've got to take a really hard look at the benefits that we impose on or that we offer to anyone to be able to build. And we've got to realize that there is a finite amount, that there is such a well-defined need that has to be addressed in everything that we do.
We're going to take a really quick break because there's something we have to play, because today is a very special day in the life of Hawaii Public Radio. We'll be back in just a second.
On the occasion of Hawaii Public Radio's 33rd birthday, we take this moment to recognize the original staff, board, and those original charter members whose loyalty and vision continue to sustain and inspire all of us every broadcast day.
Our founding staff members back in 1981 numbered just three: the late Jerry DiOrio, music director, Robert L.R. Miller, news and operations director, and the late Cliff Eblen, general manager.
Our founding board chair was John Henry Felix. Our founding board members were Tom Armour, Clifford Coleman, the late Dr. Winston Healy Jr.,
Mrs. Ernest C. Hickson, Tom Huss, the late George S. Conahele, and Carl Lindquist,
Jack Lyle, Joseph Lyons, Clifford Slater, and the late Sakai Takahashi.
And finally, the following charter members with us in 1981 were still with us in our 33rd year: Beverly Allen, Esther Aranaga, and the late Clifford Aranaga, Patricia Barron, and the late Bill Barron, the late Jean Cornell,
Stanley and Janet Dahlbeck, John Furrius Jr., Matthew and Linda Fitzgerald, Gilman and Ruth Hu,
the late Shimeji Kanazawa, the late Larry and Florence Kelly, Carrie and Darlene Krensky, Lorna Lowe,
Dr. Harold and Robin Loomis, and the late Dr. Roderick McPhee and Sharon McPhee,
Gerald and Carol Siegel, Anita Trubit, and the late Armin Katapchi.
These folks were a major part of the foundation on which Hawaii Public Radio was built, and which first went on the air 33 years ago today. Many thanks to them and to you, and happy birthday, all of us.
And that's given us where we have been able to come out today and say happy birthday and look pretty good for 33.
Happy birthday.
Thanks very much. Now, let's get back to today's show. We've got a lot of callers on the line today. We're talking about homelessness and taking a look at it from different perspectives. Joining us around our panel today, we have Colin Kippen. You know him as the homeless coordinator for the state. Also, Connie Mitchell is here from IHS. Greg Payton, Partners in Care, Executive Chair, also joining us, and Community Advocate and Disappeared News Editor Larry Geller. And you, if you want to join us, the phone lines are open, 941-3689 or 877-941-3689. Going now to Carla, calling us from the Big Island. Aloha, Carla. Welcome to Town
Square. Aloha. Happy birthday.
And thank you.
I've got a couple of things I'd like to mention and just ask about, one of which is the fact that there are an awful lot of people that have mental health issues, and they seem to end up in jail, I guess, is where they end up, finally. I know a family member who has been under the care of Care Hawaii, which is a case management, and he has finally found placement in a home, which, you know, is very good for the family to know that he's finally taken care of. But my question is, I mean, the reason this is all happening, I believe, in my personal opinion, that if we didn't let foreigners buy our property, I don't know any country that lets foreigners buy property, but in America, we let people come and take our property, and then we have our own homeless citizens, and it doesn't make sense to me. Do you have any answers to this?
All right, Carl. We'll give you an answer. I mean, we've heard lots of issues over time looking at our issue of population. Well, you can't legislate that someone can't come to Hawaii. So far as we know, people from other countries can come and buy property here and have and do. All of that said, but that rankers people. It makes them a little bit sometimes upset to see what's happened with the inflating of real estate prices and just the general congestion, all those things. And it may be a natural thing to sort of point a finger out there and say, aha, that's why it's happening. How do you handle it when people say things to you like what Carla has just said?
I wanted to just add that our services, we're a statewide organization, so we do have services in Kona, for example, and we're Mental Health Kakua. We're opening what's called a safe haven type facility. It's a housing facility in Kona town, and that'll be open in January. And we're doing that because of the local community who actually surfaced asking for those kind of services to be there. So we're working with Mayor Kanoi and some other local folks to make that happen. So in January, we'll be opening that facility. And it will be, again, it's a low-barrier type facility. You don't have to jump through any hoops to get into that program. Your calling card is that you're homeless, and in our case, you have a mental illness and probably have chemical dependency issues. So,
which is good news if you need those services. But because, you know, Carla is articulating something that we've heard now and again, can you speak to that point in terms of this concern that other people are coming here and somehow taking our space, our services, making it more congested, all of that, and not making it hospitable for people who can live affordably in Hawaii? Larry?
We need to take control of our own urban planning. Before the birthday announcement, I guess I was talking about putting a condition on developers so that they have to build affordable housing. We have a situation where any number of expensive condos can go up, but we're struggling to get housing for ourselves. Well, why do we get real, and why don't we take as citizens, instead of being complacent and saying this is happening to us, say, well, we're going to change it. We want urban planning to be done a little differently in Honolulu. It was done differently in Portland. There are other examples where people say, we're going to participate in this. We're going to have urban planning for ourselves. We're going to have housing for ourselves.
Some people would ask if it's too late for the urban core of Honolulu.
Well, I don't see. I think people, they look at a master plan, Mililani master plan, whatever it is. But did they participate in it? They couldn't have because they didn't live there yet. Now there's housing in Mililani. People are living in an area they did not plan. So things are a little backwards here, and it doesn't need to be that way. But it's like the voter issue. People don't generally go out and vote. Why? We don't know. But if we were able to participate as citizens, maybe we could take control of our own problems.
All right. Anybody else want to tackle that last one?
I think there's another dimension to this, and that's this whole conversation we have had, all of us have had, everyone around this table have had, and that has to do with this whole conversation about political will to make change happen. And it's not easily done, because if it was easy, it would already be done. Mm-hmm. So the reality is that, I'm glass is always, half full kind of guy. So I think that it's possible, but it's not, definitely not easy. And I think what I've learned, at least on this one piece, which has to do with homelessness, is that if you create a structure and you lay it out in front of people and then you start to show them the data that you generate from it, it literally changes people because they're able to see how they fit into this bigger picture. And that's what we've really tried to do here, because the data will change people. There is not one person I have ever met who is not fully committed to their task to end homelessness in all of the service providers I've met with. And they really want to be effective and they want to get it done. But, when we start to give them this data, they could see exactly what this mountain is that they need to remove a spoonful at a time. And, there are a lot of spoons out there, and it'd be great if you could get a big dump loader and solve the problem, but you can't, right? So you do the best you can.
Even as you are assisting people, people are drowning in the river, you're extending a hand to them and pulling them out. Upstream, more people are being thrown into the river, making your job more difficult. I think we need to put the whole thing together if we're going to have a solution to homelessness.
I want to bring Connie into this because, in part, some of what we heard Carla say a moment ago is a little bit of what has fallen into the conversation about homelessness. We don't want other people from other states to come here and to be homeless. Now, you and I had a conversation last week about some of what you and IHS are attempting to do to put out the word. I mean, some people have called it a PR campaign, what have you. But how do you do that successfully to let people know that this is not the place to come to be homeless, despite all the picture postcards and whatever it is that they may have heard? And does that all bring up the issue of, well, this is paradise, but paradise not for you?
Bethann, first of all, I want to clarify something. This is not, we're not about doing a public PR campaign, against people coming. We're really about educating people to the realities of life in Hawaii. And I think that if people are trying to think of a way to get here because of the lure of Hawaii, that they need to think about the realities. I just today was talking with a young lady who had moved her whole family here from Texas and was really struggling, and she really needs help to go back. She said this was a total mistake, and her mother's going back tonight and she needs help, with the rest of the family. And, it's just really a situation where people think about the fact that we have a low unemployment rate here. Oh, there must be jobs, so they come and they get here and they don't realize that, the jobs that they're able to get is not going to pay them enough to get a home. And it just doesn't jive. And so for her, very quickly, she realized, okay, this is not going to work. And so we're really trying to look at ways that we might be able to help her. But these are just really, that's just one of the instances where someone came with a notion. We get calls all the time, where people are calling and finding out, how they can actually come here and make a transition. But I tell them, it takes planning. You have to figure out what you're going to do when you get here before you decide to come. So it's really about educating people.
So very quickly, how do you send that message out? I mean, we kind of think we have the coconut wireless monopoly here in Hawaii, but you're talking about getting this message to people on the mainland and making sure that although, Hawaii may have certain attributes, one of them is not necessarily going to be a livable wage for them.
I think if, there are experiences that people have here, you would be surprised how it does carry out, you know, and carry over to other people who may be homeless thinking about coming here. I really do believe if they realize that it is a challenge to be here, that they might think twice. But it's just that they don't have the chance sometimes, you know, to really figure it out. But I tell you, we get like, you know, about 100 calls a year, and we really have to let them know that, please, you know.
Well, we're getting calls right now, so we want to see how many more we can pull through the rest of the hour. Going now to Josh, calling us from Kamuela. Aloha, Josh. Welcome to Town Square, and thank you for your patience.
Hi.
Hi there.
Yeah, I kind of got lost along those conversations, but basically, I think as long as you have an economy that runs on currency, there's still going to be homeless people. And no matter what you build, I think you still can't change it 100%. But I guess in order to solve this, or the solution to that would probably be, like, what do you offer them? Because if you just give them a free house, they might be lazy and just stuck into their ways of just...
Well, I don't think anybody is suggesting that they're just going to get a free house. I mean, that's not part of what Housing First is all about. So that's a bit of a misnomer. Anyway, Josh, thanks very much for the call. Going now to Nikki calling us from Honolulu. Aloha, Nikki.
Aloha and happy birthday, Hawaii Public Radio.
And we thank you so much.
I have three things that I want to address, and I'll try to do it very quickly. One is the job situation. If there could be a job pool that is organized, you know, to for various skill sets for homeless people. And, you know, work with a lot, you know, with the businesses. And said it's because if, regardless of what happens, people need to bring in an income. And a lot of the homeless have skill sets that, you know, are not being addressed. And
okay, so you inventory the skill sets, and then what else do you do?
Okay. Well, then you work with organizations like Alston and others so that they can set aside job pools for individuals who come in who are, you know, at strategic times in their lives.
Okay, and what's the third thing?
Okay, they need to, you know, one, and have, you know, like, dress for success, but make it literally accessible to homeless people. They can come in, you know, have areas where they can get cleaned up, they can get showered, so that when they go forth, also look at non-traditional students. If there are skill sets that need to be developed, let's look at, you know, the community colleges maybe working a little bit more intensely and getting them to work with non-traditional students so that we can educate our populace. And, you know, the third thing is for our children, you know, mobile tutorials, getting education out to our homeless children because they're, you know, they're very much affected.
All right, Nikki, thanks very much for all of that. Connie, you wanted to answer. Some of that stuff that she's talking about is, in fact, being done.
All of it is being done, actually. I think some of the homeless services, my colleagues, like with U.S. Vets, they do it with veterans. We have a traveling preschool. We have, you know, we have also other agencies that are working with employers, you know, to hire homeless people. Mental Health Kukua does it. IHS does it. Goodwill. There's just a whole host of other organizations that are really focused on trying to get people back to work.
How about some of the universities and colleges? Doesn't Chaminade have a program?
They do, and they have one at the community colleges as well, you know, where they have special training programs for people. We really are trying to connect them up with Oahu WorkLinks. You know, she talked about a job pool. There are Oahu WorkLinks offices, different places that homeless people go, and we direct them there. So there's just definitely a lot of resources available.
And that's also the idea of what happens after homelessness. Once you get somebody back into
housing. Part of the whole continuum. Yep. You just can't simply, as Josh was suggesting a moment ago, plunk somebody down in a house. Going now to Janice calling us from Maui. Okay, sorry, Janice. I guess we just lost her. Other of you who want to chime in about some of those networked situations, because I think people may have this idea that if with Housing First you get them into housing and then you start looking at all the other services that they need to have, but the idea of life beyond homelessness or life beyond houselessness still seems to be galvanizing a lot of attention, and maybe we need to focus a little bit more there, and hopefully it will pull everything else through.
Colin? You know, it was really interesting when Nikki was talking, and as soon as she started suggesting those ideas, I just thought of the two people seated to my left, Connie and Greg, because they're running those kinds of programs. If I had to sort of step back from what it is we all do on a daily basis, it really is trying to create networks, systemized, predictable networks, because that's how you really end homelessness. I think that's how you build community as well. And it's the difficult part about it is that it cannot be something that is just sort of dependent upon your personal skills. We need to be able to create the mechanisms to do that so that we can literally start to see how it is we build these webs, because they're just absolutely crucial. When I think about the kind of work that we're doing now, just to house someone, we are now talking, our service providers meet weekly, and they're talking with amongst one another in ways they hadn't done before in a very intentional, focused, structured way, which is different than just, you know, calling up someone you may have developed a relationship and say, hey, you know, you want to go get a beer, and you go and you talk about something, you know, that sort of a thing, right? So we're really trying.
I mean, that's nice, too, but that doesn't do the work that you're talking about.
But it really is, because a lot of the stuff that we're finding is that when you create those opportunities for people to work together, and then you really spend some time trying to structure how that's going to go, you know, human will just takes over, and people want to do this work together. I mean, that's the thing that, to me, is absolutely mind-blowing every time it happens. It's absolutely the same thing that Greg was talking about when he's, you know, on Pauahi Street talking with the Chinatown business merchants. And he's created a structure where they can have these conversations with him about homelessness on Pauahi Street.
But what I hear all of you saying, though, is that it's when you get out there and you start to have some of these face-to-face conversations and being able to build that into not just a network with each other, but also one that can take on the issue of political will, because that still seems to be where everyone smacks up against. I mean, looking at the fact that, you know, Colin, you can say all this and still say, I have no budget, or I have very little budget at this point. Those kinds of things, you know. We're hoping maybe you'll get some.
The next governor will give him some money.
Well, the point being that all of this goodwill, all of the work that you can do can go so far a very long way, but at some point you're still going to be bucking political will. Well,
the government resources cannot do it alone. That's why we need these private and business partnerships in the community. I was thinking about a quote from a guy, Bill Anthony from Boston University, many years ago. He said, when they put people with mental illness into the community, he said that we put freedom in their life, but not life in their freedom. And so that's what the next step is, I think, for us, is to really create these social networks with people, to really be connected with local community. And we hire about 50 people a year.
Well, Greg Payton, we began the show by letting you start because you are the newbie. We'll let you end with it. But with thanks to Colin Kippen and to Connie Mitchell and Larry Geller, the hour evaporated, and we have to say goodbye. Thank you all. We'll take this on again another time. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich. Thanks for joining us tonight for Town Square on HPR's birthday, 33 years old. How about that? I'll be back with you tomorrow morning for the conversation right here at 8 o'clock. Take good care. Aloha.